Napa Know How.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards, and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
Welcome into the Friday edition of Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. I'm happy to be with you. Thanks to all of you guys for joining us on this Friday. And I say us because I've got a very special guest alongside. We are going to get into a lot of nuts and bolts of Grizzlies roster, contract, trade possibilities with my guest, Matt Herdlicka. Now, you know Matt, I think, many of you. And if you don't, let me give you a little introduction to Matt. Matt's a good dude, number one, right out of the gate. He's a dad, number two. He also is a Grizzly fan and writer for Grizzly Bear Blues, along with a lot of our other friends and sometime guests here on the pod. So I appreciate Matt joining. And of course, Matt has really carved out a nice specialty for himself in contracts, in CBA, in trade talks, that kind of stuff, where you really need to have a good understanding of some of the Byzantine workings of the CBA. Matt has done a great job of getting all that in the mix and writing very well about it in addition to writing about other stuff. So, Matt, I appreciate you joining me here on this Friday.
Well, thank you. And you can call a spade in this case. It's a nerd.
I'm the same way. So yeah. if I call you a nerd, it is with the greatest of appreciation for what you do. Okay, so right out of the gate, I want you to kind of give me a feel for what you think about this Grizzly roster, what you think about this group as it stands right now. What would you do? If you're looking just kind of figuring out, like, all right, they lost Brandon Wright for the year, but Chandler Parsons is coming back, and, you know, Tony Allen is hit or miss, who knows? Mike still on whatever, I don't know if there are minutes restrictions or not, to be honest with you. They're on the maintenance program, is what they say. So this roster is what it is right now. What's your expectation for what they could do?
Yeah, so it's still very, dependent on injuries. Everybody's talking about injuries. But I thought you gave a pretty fair assessment, in some of your podcasts and writing leading up to the season. I think in one of your podcasts, you had them at, low 40 wins, projected to miss the playoffs. I felt like that was like a little bit more negative than I have, but at the same time, it's not outlandish by any means. And, it's definitely within the spectrum of events that could happen. And I think, as we stand here today, maybe it looks a little bit more likely now that we've had 10 games on our belt that they will be, low 40s wins. But, I still think mid 40s could happen, maybe even upper 40s. If there's a lot that could be worked out, not just with the minutes or with young guys. These young guys, hopefully, maybe they improve, make small improvements along the year and get better. Maybe the team adjusts to Coach Fizdale. So I still think we need another 5 to 10 games before we really start, sounding the alarms or, weeping in the streets or whatever. But to put it bluntly, I think you were pretty close, low 40s, to mid 40s, something like that.
Before we go too much further than, Matt, I kind of alluded to it earlier, the injury to Brandon Wright. Where does that put Brandon Wright for those of us who like to mess around? And I've said it. I'm no Johnny Trade Machine. You're much more of the Trade Machine guy. You're a bit of a maestro with all of that. But if I'm out there and I'm just kind of messing around with trades and possibilities, what do I do with Brandon Wright now? He's got 2 years left on his deal, a very reasonable deal. If you factor in, that if he could play, no deal is particularly reasonable for a guy who can't play. The thought is that he could maybe come back at some point this year, but that's still very much up in the air, and the outlook has generally been pretty negative with regard to Grizzly players. So is he an asset? Does a team see value in him? What can you do if you're trying to think about trades involving Brandon Wright.
I think you'd be hard pressed to find a team out there that views that as an asset. But it's still a relatively small contract. You're not talking about something toxic. You know, you're not gonna, and frankly, the Grizzlies have no reason to trade him away and have to, you know, give assets away to get him off the books. That's not where they're at. They have a very, they can't clear cap space. They're hard pressed to clear cap space. So that's good. They don't need that. This isn't like a Maurice Spates and Wayne Ellington situation where you have to, you know, clear him off your books to get under the luxury tax or anything like that. But I wouldn't say that any team really has value there. The saving grace is that, if you can find a team that maybe wants to trade away a larger contract, he has a nice size contract where, you know, you could do some kind of 2-for-1, or maybe 3-for-2 deal. And his money wouldn't be seen with another team as like, you know, a deal breaker, I don't think.
Yeah, that's kind of, you could throw him in,
yeah,
as a possibility, and that wouldn't be crazy, but you certainly wouldn't be able to, you know, have him as the key guy in any kind of trade.
Right.
That seems to make a lot of sense. So if you are now, like, as you start, and I'm sure you have been, honestly, Matt, knowing you, I'm sure you've been, you know, digging around, looking at various, you know, team rumors, who might be available, that kind of thing. If you're looking to bolster this Grizzly squad, where do you start?
Well, I listened to your great podcast with Grizzly Bear Blue's own Andrew Ford, and I was pleasantly surprised that he kind of he is going in the same direction I am, which is I think the team needs a two guard. I think that is sort of the biggest hole. You know, if they want to go short term, it would be backup point guard, but I think, given that you have two rookies there and one of them, I think, you know, the team has high hopes for, you know, I don't think you should be in a rush to get a backup point guard. Whereas a shooting guard, I think you can go short-term fix or long-term, depending on, you know, what the Grizzlies internally want to do. So that's what I would do.
Matt, how long do you think it takes for a team to kind of gel, to coalesce? I've written a little bit this week in the Commercial Appeal, and as we tape this, it hasn't appeared yet, but it will by the time people hear this, about Marc Gasol and his difficulty in acclimating to the new things that are expected of him. He's kind of been either or. He's been you know, pretty poor offensively for the first five games, but actually really good defensively in that stretch, and then horrible defensively over the last few ball games. While his offense has gotten better, some of that tracks with also bringing Chandler Parsons into the mix too. Those two guys as a pair have horrible defensive numbers. I mean, like, horrible, like off the charts horrible. Together, the opponents are shooting 55% when those two guys are on the floor together. It's the worst of any two-man Grizzly unit over the last four games. So, not great, but you have to take into account that they have to acclimate, they have to get used to each other, rosters have to get used to each other. All these things, you know, you have to give it time. If you're making a trade or you're thinking Grizzly trade, they've been known to pull the trigger early. Last year or two, they've been one of the first teams to actually make a trade. When is it time to say, you know what, that two-guard spot's not getting a whole lot better, the backup point-guard spot, it's not going to improve, we need a little help at one of the backup big positions. When do you pull that trigger?
Well, I think first of all, the team has more input than we do. They have a better idea of, you know, their long-term, or I should say they have more information, maybe not a better idea, but they have certainly have more information than we do about where they project to be. And they also, you know, we're kind of in the dark as far as what these minutes restrictions are. But I think for self-evaluation, that would be critical at their team level. I suspect if I was in their shoes, I would be wanting at least another month. Because, you know, we kind of hinted at it before, they can go in a couple of directions. If they want to fulfill this, you know, bolster the two guard and, they get some signs from their backup point guards that maybe that'll be okay, then doing a 2-for-1 and bringing in somebody like Mario Chalmers might work better. If we get into another month and both of those backup point guards are, you know, a disaster, they may say, you know what, we just need to fix this. We need to put a Band-Aid, you know, a tourniquet on this situation here. We can't afford to put our limited resources, trade resources to use on the wing. We got to do something in the backup point guard. So I would wait at least another month. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's probably that makes the most sense. And I think they would probably ideally like to do that. But it kind of dovetails with my next question for you, and it was the one that got my man Kevin Leip into a little hot water with some section of Grizzly fans. Because, look, man, you know, the truth is, like, I mean, I cover the team. You know, I'm on the media side. You take an analytic approach. You take a more data-driven approach than most fans. Yeah, a lot of people pay a lot of money to go watch a team win. To go watch mm-hmm. team win games, short term, whatever. They're not all that interested. I think some people are now, but there's still a big chunk of fans who aren't really all that interested in the long term cap sheets and all that kind of thing that the team has to take and pay attention to. So how do you balance that out is my question. I mean, you know, how quickly you address these issues has to do with your tolerance for losing, has mm-hmm. to do with your willingness to accept short term loss for long term gain. And I can do that. I can say I don't have any skin in that game because I don't, you know, I cover the team, but I don't, you know, I'm not paid by the team and I don't pay the team. So I'm an independent, you know, person in this whole thing. The fans may have a completely different approach. I wonder how you kind of strike the balance there.
Well, I think fans, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I have always been predisposed. This is in sports and then just in, you know, general life, saving, all that type of stuff. I always think long term. You know, I run a business. I think long term there too. So, but I totally understand what you're saying. And to those people, what I would say is, you know, those future wins don't whet your appetite right now, but, you know, maybe they will in a couple of years. You know, I just think, you know, the reason we're in this spot is because of decisions that were made 5 years ago, mm-hmm. 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Those chickens do come home to roost eventually. You know, you can't always be selling, buying for today. You've got to invest some in the future. So it's not a sexy sales pitch, but I think it's a necessary one. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't tell a season ticket holder, hey, come watch us lose, you know, but, you know, that's what I would tell them. And frankly, you know, I'm not in that position. So I can just sit back and decide what I think the team should do on my own, which is nice.
I think you make a good point because it's like, you know, the Grizzlies have used the credit card to keep paying off, you know, mm-hmm. their problems. You've had a loan, then you paid off with this card. Now that card's got more interest. Now, I mean, you're down, you know, two first round picks in the next 4 seasons, and you could well see, you know, that could be a lottery pick this year that goes to Denver, and for what? In this case, that is to rid yourself of those contracts that you had alluded to earlier, in Wayne Ellington and Maurice Spates, and both of whom turned out to actually be, you know, useful players in certain systems. You know, that was just poor planning on the Grizzlies' part, and they paid dearly, not immediately, but eventually they will have paid dearly. You can go back to the trade that changed the entire franchise's history, and mm-hmm. and it wasn't this group that did it, but the decision to go after Otis Thorpe back when they were in Vancouver in 1999 cost them a 2003 pick that turned out to probably would have been Carmelo Anthony. That's the kind of thing you talk about, and who knows what this pick will end up being if it's conveyed this year. Presumably it will be to Denver. Who knows what that will be, but that's the point. I mean, like, you know, Jeff Green for this pick that's going to go to Boston eventually, you know, getting rid of these guys to free up a little, you know, wiggle room under the luxury tax. If you don't plan well, Matt, and that's where fans, it does matter. And fans yeah. should pay more attention, because if you don't plan well, it will have a material impact on the way your team actually performs on the court.
And it's more than just the pick, because you can go back and relitigate all trades and say, oh, well, you know, this team did really well and they gave up a pick in the 20s. But it's not just that. It's the opportunity cost of being able to trade a pick. The Grizzlies are not allowed by league rules to trade a pick until the end of this decade. And right now they're hamstrung, not just because they owe potential lottery picks, but because they can't trade that pick and they need talent.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You like to have as many options as you can.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the Grizzlies did well in the secondary Jeff Green trade, even if they did poorly in the first one to get him.
Sure.
They did well to get rid of him because, you know, Deontay Davis looks like he's going to be a player. Roddy Zagorak is looking pretty darn good for Megalex over in the Adriatic League, and he projects to be a very nice contributor eventually. I don't know, you know, next year he'll come over as a rookie and kind of be the quote-unquote first-round pick for mm-hmm. the Grizzlies. They like what he can do at the three spot, and he does fill a need. He probably does a lot of stuff that Vince Carter is doing this year. Now, he won't do it as well as Vince, but he can probably do some of that stuff, which could make Vince a little more expendable long-term. But that's the kind of thing that you have to do. You have to make do and do the best you can with the hand that you've dealt, even if you've dealt it yourself to some extent. So with mm-hmm. that in mind, you know, Deontay Davis seems to be moving on. You know he's a favorite of mine. I've been, you know, plumping for a long time that he needs to be playing alongside Zach Randolph, and I think his development to me is crucial both short and long term, because the Grizzlies have never really had too many guys like him. They did the profiles in that same mold. If he comes along, does that then make one of the other bigs a little more expendable, whether it's Jermichael Green, whether it's Jarrell Martin? You know, I don't know what Brandon Wright's situation is going to be. Does it make you now much more willing to make a move there?
Yeah, I think this team needs to trade big for small. And unfortunately for them, that's a tough spot to be in, because everybody wants to trade. Everybody has too many bigs because, yep. you know, you're playing wings at the four now. And, you know, you need more wing minutes. You need those skills a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I think that's, and most importantly, the team has control over Deontay Davis. They've got him for 3 years, and then he's a restricted free agent. So this is a guy who is part of the team's future. Same thing with Wade Baldwin, same thing with, Jarrell. The guy I would be, the reason I lean towards Jermichael Green being the odd man out is just strictly that, and you know this, he's a restricted free agent this summer, and a lot of teams are going to have cap space, and somebody will pay him. It may not be a number that the Grizzlies want to match. And I also think this kind of gets lost in that sometimes, but you know, Portland did this a lot where a lot of their restricted free agents, they just matched and they said, you know what, we're going to figure it out later. But I don't know if Jermichael being a little bit older than, like, he's in his best years right now. That next contract, I don't know if it's going to be attractive, like, as an asset to trade future. So I think if you lock him up for 4 years, if he gets a 4 year, $44 million deal, I don't know if other teams are going to be beating down the door to say, even though we signed him to that deal, we don't want to trade for it now. So I don't know if you're going to get an asset in the next 4 years of Jermichael's career at the number you have to pay him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's a very legitimate concern given his, you know, lack of size, given his age. He, you know, a lot of people think he's younger than he really is. I mean, he's, you know, he'll be 27 for this next contract. So that's right, you know, squarely in the prime of your career. You don't tend to see a lot more development at that stage, even though the Grizzlies have squeezed a lot of development out of him, and he's done a great job of working hard
right.
and taking advantage of his opportunity. I don't think any of this is meant to in any way malign what he's done. He's been a very important guy, and Fizdale does like him a lot. That is legit. I do think that you have to give to get, though, and you have
yep.
to look and see who's available. Now, I've talked about this. I think, you know, with Fizdale's system and what he wants to run with a more aggressive pick-and-roll look, with hard-hedging bigs, with you know, not a lot of going under screens, with not a lot of that playing center field that we've seen so much of from Marc Gasol, that it's going to be much more of an active front. That really, you know, makes Zach Randolph's job very difficult. It makes it very difficult to play him on the defensive end. The numbers have borne that out. He has been, you know, pretty bad. That's why I would go after a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein. That's if he's out there and the trade rumors have been swirling with him and with Omri Caspi, I think that's a 1-2 punch. Can you find a way to get me Omri Caspi and Willie Cauley-Stein? Because that solves, you know, I don't know that Caspi's strictly a two. I mean, yeah, I guess you could do that. He's a little more of a three probably, but he certainly could shoot. And I think you can make an argument that he's the fourth best player on that Kings roster for whatever that's worth. If you can get both those guys together, I think Fizdale would do wonders with Willie Cauley-Stein. He's a freak athlete and has all the raw tools. You know, it's like Deontay Davis, but he's even bigger and longer. I don't know. I love that deal, Matt, but I can't make it work like you might be able to. Tell me that's at least plausible.
You're giving me too much credit. So I don't know. I mean, numbers wise, what would work would be Willie Cauley-Stein and Omri Caspi for something like, Vince, Jamichael, and maybe like Troy Daniels. One of the contracts of like Troy Daniels,
deal's off, by the way. We can't get rid of Troy Daniels. He's crucial, critical part of this team. Deal breaker.
Well, I think the things that if Vince continues to play well, teams will call for him. And Vince may want to, I mean, we both know Dave Yeager cried about Vince Carter, great he was to be around. So maybe Sacramento would view that as an asset. And Vince for Omri they're similar in the sense that they shoot a lot of threes. You know, they handle straight line drives pretty well. Vince might actually be a better defender than him, but,
I think he probably is actually, but, you know, I'm not getting Omri for defense here. We need some, you know, I was telling you before the pod that the Grizzlies out of the two guard position get the worst production of any team in the NBA. If you take all the guys that have played there and you total everything up, you know, they're averaging about 13 points a game from that position, shooting a little under 21% from behind the 3-point line. So my God, there's only one place to go from there.
Yeah, well, Omri's more of a 3-4, I think, but you know, you can play him with James Ennis and
I'm having to kind of squeeze it here. I mean, I know he's not a 2, but I have to kind of I'm gonna squeeze one of those guys down a little bit and just and view it as kind of a hybrid. So you know, cuz they're not getting a lot of production out of that 3 spot either, by the way.
Right.
The wings as a whole are a little bit of a problem, and Chandler Parsons coming back, you know, will eventually, I think, help that, but his return is going about as slowly as you would have expected. It's taken him a while to kind of creak into action.
Yeah, and I think you're smart. Some people might be listening and thinking, oh, well, you know, we know Peter loves Deontay Davis. Why is he going out and get another center? And I think it's because, you know, you and I can like Deontay Davis as much as possible and all this stuff. They are slightly different players, but then also you don't shape your roster around Deontay Davis. If you have a chance to go get Willie Cauley-Stein and gamble, which is what you'd be doing, just gambling on him figuring out his potential and sort of like, you know, developing his hands and learning how to leverage his athleticism to the skills that we all, you know, he was drafted to do. I think that's a good gamble. You know, every trade has gamble. And risk. And I think that would be a good gamble regardless of how much me or you would like Deontay Davis.
No, without a doubt. I mean, you have to, and especially if the Grizzlies are starting to look longer term here with this roster. And I think they have to. They have to, as much as you have the big three of Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, Chandler Parsons, all that money tied up, you know, 3/4 of your cap figure tied up in those three contracts, you know, that can't obviate your development of youth. That can't obviate your risk taking. That can't completely preclude you from being the team that you want to be in 5 years, because those guys aren't going to be around. It's a tricky line that you have to kind of walk on without crossing on either side. And the Grizzlies have, I think, struggled to find that ground. Mm-hmm. Where else would you be looking? Like if you're looking for two guards, or you're looking for shooters, you're looking for guys that can, because I mean, clearly it can't just be a shooter. Troy Daniels, I realize that it's been a horrible start. I mean, beyond horrible, mind-blowingly bad. But he still, you know, points per shot, he was third in the league last year. He was first in fourth quarter 3-point percentage last year, and yet he didn't play very much because, you know, that's really all he provides. And now he's not even providing that, so he's not playing for the Grizzlies. So it can't just be a shooter. Is there any underserved team or people or players that you think would be reasonable targets for the Grizzlies?
Yeah, so one of the things I look at when looking at trades is not thinking about what you have to offer, but how can you fix other teams' problems? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't think about it that way. And it takes like sort of, you have to sort of flip it around, the trade dynamic a little bit. But if you look at it that way, what I would be trying to do is fix other teams' cap sheets, you know, taking on a little bit longer money for a team that wants to use cap space next summer. And there will be a ton of teams that want to do it, and it'll be another arms race. And I'm excited to watch it unfold and to mock bad decisions that teams make. But the Grizzlies are going to be hard pressed to clear enough cap space to make a difference, to acquire a player. And it would require, you know, punting on Zach Randolph and Tony Allen, and if he's still around, Vince Carter. And I just don't think you can get enough talent in to justify that. So Jamichael Green has value to a team because he's going to be a restricted free agent, but to a team who is using cap space this summer, they can use his low cap hold the same way the Grizzlies did with Mike Conley and, you know, hold on to him, tell him, you know, we will take care of you. Then they use all their cap space and then they sign him afterwards. And the Grizzlies could do that, except they basically did their shot last year. So I would be looking to help a team who wants to use cap space or who is potentially butting up against the luxury tax to get out of that problem. Whether that means, and I would be looking for guards that have contracts that last into next year. Guys like Lou Williams, Ronnie Stuckey, maybe even somebody like, if you wanted to do like Brian Roberts and Jeremy Lamb from mm-hmm. Charlotte, you know, maybe you could get Brian Roberts. He would help. I don't think Brian Roberts is very good, but if you want a backup point guard who is bad in a different way than your young point guards, maybe that would, you know, at least he's a veteran who, you know, won't be coughing the ball up every time down the court, but you know, and it gives you basically a different option. The one that would be extremely, you know, if they really wanted to gamble, they could call Utah. Utah is going to be paying a luxury tax next year. And I would be offering them a way to avoid that. If they wanted to trade Alec Burks and maybe Raul Neto, I think Sheldon Mack is probably a little too good for this type of thing, but Alec Burks has 3 years and $30 million left. And you might be able to get, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Utah said, you know, we don't want to pay the luxury tax. We want to sign George Hill and Gordon Hayward, and we're willing to give up a first. I mean, they have an Oklahoma City first round pick. If they wanted to give up their first round pick this year, it's probably going to be pretty good. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they sold Alec Burks and Raul Neto for a first round pick and some cap relief, you know?
I like that. I like Burks. I'm a believer in that guy's talent. So it makes a lot of sense to go after a guy like that. That would solve, you know, as you point out, I think that's the right way you have to look at it. You have to make sure when you're making these trades, I see too many of these fake trades that don't take the other team into consideration. And you just look foolish when you put something out there that a team would have. I mean, you have to think, why would I do this? If I'm the other right. team's GM, why do I want to do this? What's in it for me? Both of those GMs have to have, there's a reason why, like, there are untold numbers of trades that are proposed and discussed at various right. stages around all NBA teams, most of which, you know, I'd say 95% of which never make it past a very, very early stage because, you know, it doesn't answer that question. There's not enough in it. So you have to kind of think about that. Now, I want to ask you this. Does the new CBA coming into effect, it doesn't look like it's going to have a huge change in terms of the basketball-related income. There's probably going to be some, looks like there'll be a little more found in certain areas. Looks like there'll be some tweaks in some of the, you know, various rules about the drug policy with marijuana, some of the things like that. But in terms of the actual nuts and bolts, money-wise, not a ton of differences appear to be on the way, like a reduction in the window for a restricted free agent to match, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, offer sheet, stuff like that. The one thing that I'm intrigued by, though, is the two-way contract, the boost, what appears to be a boost in D-League salaries to $50,000 to $75,000, and then the introduction of two-way contracts where you could have a 16th and 17th roster spot mm-hmm. that you could flex and have guys go up and down, sort of like in baseball, somebody going down to AAA for a little bit and coming back up. How does that impact you in the off season, and how does that impact you maybe even going into this trade deadline, knowing that teams might be sniffing around guys for that sort of a role?
Yeah, so right now there's like I think every team in the league is carrying 15 guys. They're carrying the max number of, and so, you know, when we talk about doing a 2-for-1, you know, there's a stumbling block there in that there is no team that can take on an extra player right now. Which is not to say that, you know, somebody with a non-guaranteed salary couldn't be cut, but you know, it's just kind of stunning to think that. And part of the reason is just because everybody knows, number one, you have more roster spots next year. Number two, the minimum salary is going up and the mid-level exception is going up and the rookie scale is going up. And why I keep coming back to fixing other teams' problems is all of these things conspire to lower the amount of cap space in the league. If you have to hold on to minimum salary guys instead of at 500,000 or 800,000, they're now at 1.2 or 100. You're cutting off, you're making it harder to use cap space. And that's why I think that it might be a good idea to, try to take one of these problems off of a team's hand and just sort of, I mean, you're punting on next year's salary or using cap space, but you're probably going to be hard pressed to do that anyway. So, I think that that's the biggest thing. The other thing I would look at as Grizzlies fans is if the CBA comes in and they raise the mid-level exception to $8 million, the Grizzlies, if they stay over the cap, that they can sign a guy for $8 million. If they want to pay Zagorek more than his minimum to lock him up for more years, they have to use an exception to do that. And probably what they would do is use a portion of the mid-level exception. So if you're wondering whether we're going to have cap space or not, they would have to clear much more than $8 million of cap space to make it worth their while to clear cap space, if that makes sense. Because they already have $8 million of buying power with bringing everybody back. And I think that that's kind of an important thing for fans to keep in mind is if you see a number and they say, oh, Grizzlies can clear $11 million. Well, why would they do that? They'd have to cut good players and they already have $8 million to spend with the mid-level exception. So I think that that's – as far as the things that I'm looking at for the CBA, those would be the things that actually intrigue me the most for the Grizzlies.
Very interesting that you brought that up, Matt, and that's something people need to pay attention to going forward in the trade deadline, when not just with the Grizzlies but with other teams, when you see rumors that these are all – a lot of this is done, that you look at the free agents that would be available – you know, for teams that are really trying to clear up, like the Lakers, if they want to try to make a huge splash, there's such great free agents that are available. You know, they would be very motivated to get a guy like Lou Williams off the books. That would make a lot of sense for them. And the Grizzlies, you know, they have no chance, in their spending power, as you point out, is, you know, probably better served staying over the cap using those exceptions anyway. So that's a possibility. I like that rumor. That we're going to start right here. I like that rumor a lot that I heard on Locked On Grizzlies, that the Grizzlies are looking at Lou Williams. So, see, that's how you start a rumor, Matt. We just did it right there. Are you feeling good? Are you proud of yourself?
It's very easy these days to just, you know, say something and then suddenly it become fact. So
perfect. Well, we are in a post-fact society.
Post-factual, yes.
That's right. So it works out well in this case for us. So last thing, with all that in mind, do you expect the Grizzlies to, as they've done in years past, make at least one minor to mid-sized trade? Will they make more than one? What are the odds that the roster as it stands right now, and I'm forgetting that, like, maybe they go out and pick up Mario Chalmers, maybe they cut like Troy Williams and pick up Mario Chalmers. That's within the realm of possibility. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying trade-wise, what are the odds that this roster is different come the end of the trade deadline?
I think it's pretty high. I would say, you know, 3 out of 4, 75%, something like that, just because they have a history of being proactive. And, you know, I think you had mentioned they have completed early deals. Even though early deals are generally very unlikely, they have done it. They've gone out and gotten Mario Chalmers before in – I think it was last November they did that. So it has happened before. I still think they need some time to, you know, the other thing they need to do is just sort of see how Chandler Parsons goes. He's part of your team. He's going to be part of your team for 4 years. And if he starts to look like Chandler Parsons again, the type of player you need to get is better informed by that. But yeah, I think it's really high. I think that they look at the same numbers I do, and I think that they probably would be looking to trade Jermichael if they had to do something.
So if you give me like a quick ranking of players that are like, give me the power rankings of players that are likely to be traded, like, go down the list of, you know, you can go least likely to most likely, or you can go most likely to least likely. If you're looking, are you looking at a copy of the roster? Do you have the roster in front of you?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So pick a direction and go.
What I would do is just go most likely I would trade Jermichael first, and that's not a knock on him. I think he's a good rotation player. You know, kind of in between starter and bench, but good. I would really like them to see if they're not going anywhere and they would like to trade Vince. I would love to see him on the Cavs just competing for a championship. So I would go Jermichael, Vince, Jarrell, and Andrew Harrison, then Jarrell, then, maybe somewhere in the Tony, Brandon, Troy Daniels. Like, if they want to take on more salary, I would be trying to get Troy Daniels into that deal just to kind of mitigate the future salary. But I doubt that they trade Zach Randolph. If they did trade Zach Randolph, how do you feel about this? Zach Randolph for Omer Asik and a very, very lightly protected first round pick. Very lightly protected.
I mean, I think that would go over like the old fart in a spacesuit among the Grizzlies fans. But there is certainly a motivation and a reason to do it and to try to replenish your pick status and to get what could be a very good pick out of a deal like that. I think you'd have to have one hell of a sweetener to sweeten a deal like that. But that might be enough.
I don't want them to do that deal, but it gets them out of like probably the worst contract in the league. So
I mean, it's and he is.
I love Zach. I don't want to trade him.
I know you don't.
I want to receive hate mail. I love Zach.
this is not your personal opinion. You're just we're talking about what might be.
So starting another rumor is what I'm doing.
That rumor is. Boy, you are really gonna get some hate tweets after starting that.
It's on your podcast. You heard it on Locked On Sports, everybody. Or Locked On Grizzlies, everybody.
don't get me killed here, please. We don't need that. So okay, two quick things. I know I said last thing, but I just thought of two quick things I wanted to address. One is, who's the player on the roster that you're most excited to watch over the next few years?
I am going to say Jarrell, just because I think he splashed some defensive versatility that I didn't think he had. And literally all he doesn't even need a jump shot. All he needs to do is finish around the rim. And it has been, a little disappointing his numbers so far there, but like he gets fouls. And a lot of times guys just are slapping at him and he's just not holding onto the ball. If he can find a way to get through that, I think he's the guy that I would be most excited about for the next 5 years. And I recognize that, I'm probably in the minority there. I like all their young guys. I like Davis. I like Wade Baldwin. And I don't think Andrew Harrison is a lost cause. I think that he has shown some skills. I'm still kind of pessimistic on him overall, but I don't look at him and just say, man, that's sunk cost. We need to get out of that. Like, I think that there might be a player there.
I would agree with that. I don't hate Andrew Harrison, although I think his role may be better served as showcasing him and then trying to move him to someone else. But that's a possibility. Who do you think? And I asked Kevin Leip this. I think I may have asked Chris Harrington this too. So I'll ask you. Who is the most important player on the roster? Whose success? Well. And I'm speaking of young players because I think we know, like, Mark, Mike, you know, I agree with you. Those guys are on a different stratosphere. But for the long-term success of the franchise, like 5-10 years down the line, who has to develop? Which player is like, you've got to get this one right or else it's going to be a material problem for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say Wade Baldwin, just because primary ball handlers are really hard to find. I think that that's probably the rarest. You can get by without a rim protector. Like, you know, what Charlotte's doing right now, the Charlotte Hornets, is amazing. Like, they don't have rim protection and they are a great defense. Mm-hmm. And so, like, of all those big guys, like Jarrell, Deontay Davis, like, we have a lot of bites of the apple there about finding, you know, a good big, but Wade Baldwin is probably the only young guy that has, the ability to be that primary ball handler. And really his problems are just, he doesn't know how to finish yet. And he makes a lot of bad decisions, but he's young and that's what you expect. And I would say him out of anybody. He is the most important because he has the skill set to not only be the future, but also be a part of the present by playing off the ball and stuff. So I would say him both for now and going forward.
How his mechanics, get improved in his work with Bate, that's important.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you that for the first time in a long time, the Grizzlies have two guys in Baldwin and I think Deontay Davis who have legitimate star power. I would say in terms of their roles, you know, I don't know, if they'll get there. There's a long shot that both will get there and it's a reasonably long shot that even one will get there. But for the first time in a while, they have guys that profile that way, and Jarrell is probably not far behind with what he can do. So that is exciting and something new, but I think this is a very uncertain next few weeks for the Grizzlies to kind of figure out where they stand going forward. Matt, as always, I appreciate you very much and your patience throughout this whole process. Matt, you know, we can tell the folks we've had – I had all kinds of recording problems. But this is
don't tell on yourself.
This is the podcast honesty. The podcasts are about honesty. You know, we try to do this and everything went great except for Matt's voice being recorded. So my voice was crystal clear and I was talking to myself for our first interview, which was not as compelling. So Matt was very kind to give a little more of his day to try to do this again. And I think we've got that thing squared away. Matt, you can tell folks how they can get in touch with you if they shoot you an email, tweet, read your stuff, plug yourself.
Yeah, so I write over at Grizzly Bear Blues, great website with Joe Mullinax, Andrew Ford, Kevin Young, just a whole bunch of great writers over there. I'm really happy with the work everybody puts out. And then I also tweet. I've been known to tweet. It's at the real Hrdlicka, Hrdlicka. And then, that's pretty much it.
There you go. Now you know. That's, follow Matt on Twitter, definitely, and read, Matt's stuff and read everybody over at Grizzly Bear Blues. They do a fabulous job. Matt, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and, have yourself a great weekend, buddy.
All right. You too, Peter. Take care.
Thank you once again for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you want to shoot me an email about the show or if you want to find out more about advertising on this podcast, please feel free to email me whatever you want, peter@peteredmiston.com. That's peter@peteredmiston.com. Follow me on Twitter @peteredmiston. Check me out every morning, 7 to 10. Wolo and Peter in the morning, Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 87.7 FM. Read me in the commercial appeal in the numbers game each and every week. Thanks go out to Audionautics as well for help with the music. And, of course, please subscribe and review. I would love it and really appreciate it if you would do that. Until next time, thank you so much. You have been Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.